Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back. Droid Live Show today, episode 162. It is Friday, January 12th. I'm your host, Kellen. With me, Tim. Tim's here.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Tim here.
So we're back from CES. That was the big happening of the week. It's CES. No longer Consumer Electronics Show, but CES. So CES 2018. And we were there for four nights, something like that. We've been there all week. We got back yesterday, back to the home base. And it's time to do a little show, a little recap action, talk about what we saw, what we liked, drama, whatever else was going on this week. There was a ton of stuff. So I guess we'll just jump in with maybe kind of an overview of how the week started, went down, and all of that. So for those who aren't sure, my cat's like meowing in the background. So how it works is CES is like a four-day conference. So the conference was actually like Tuesday through, I think, today, even though we're not there. But because we're press, we get there a couple days early because there's press happenings in the 2 days leading up to the actual show floor of CES opening. So we actually got there Sunday, checked in, got our badges, all that stuff. The press releases just start rolling out almost immediately once that happens. So we did that. Then Monday is press day, and that's when like the floodgates really start opening and everyone starts announcing whatever they've got. Plus, there's a press conference from a whole bunch of big companies like Samsung, LG. I don't know who else this year. It seems to change. Qualcomm always has one. I think TCL had one. And Ellen, I forgot to mention the night before that all happened, Honor had one. NVIDIA had one. So there's press conferences for almost like 2 days. Then the show floor opens on Tuesday morning. Another flood of information comes out and announcements, and the booths open up and you can kind of go tour stuff and play with products and demo things and all that stuff, do interviews, whatever. So that happens for multiple days. It's a lot. It's overwhelming at times. It's draining, all that stuff, but it's also kind of fun. Like, we always turn it into fun. I know a lot of people in the media really don't like CES. I don't personally love it, but I do appreciate the experience. Like, every year Tim and I go and we have fun. Like, while the news related to what we do seems to decrease each year, we still have fun and there's still some noteworthy stuff out of it. So anyway, that's kind of how the breakdown works of how the week went. We typically stay for about 2 days worth of the actual event being open, and then we just get the hell out of there because you can only live in Vegas for so long before terrible things probably just start happening. So let's see those. So the big stories, we'll get to our best of list, but we just wanted to run through some other notable things that happened during CES. And so if you notice we don't mention anything, that's probably because it's in our best of list, which we also just published on the site. We've got our best of CES 2018, so feel free to go check that out if you want. But anyway, let's start out. I think that one of the biggest things in terms of just media drama that we talked about with a lot of other journalists, bloggers, that stuff, was the Huawei situation. So if you haven't been paying attention at all, Huawei's been teasing for, hasn't it been like a year and a half? I guess they haven't been teasing. There's just been reports for probably like a year and a half, 2 years, that said Huawei was going to make their big US push. They're going to join with a wireless carrier and finally sell a phone. So Huawei's jumped all the way up to like number three smartphone manufacturer in the world, I believe, behind Samsung and Apple. And that's without being on a US carrier, which is actually a pretty big deal. So this year finally supposed to be the year. Huawei had this big keynote lined up on day one in the middle of the afternoon. They were going to take the stage and everyone expected they were going to announce that they were going to sell their Mate 10 Pro on AT&T. And then the day before, right? I think the day before the keynote, a report drops out from Wall Street Journal that says AT&T's backed away and they are no longer partnering with Huawei. And they didn't have a reason. And then a similar time, the information published another report related that said, actually, it was U.S. representatives from Congress, House of Representatives, whatever, sent letters to the FCC saying, we don't want this to happen. The FCC must have then gone to AT&T and said, look, there's going to be massive blowback if this happens. Something along the way. We'll probably never know the true details of the story. But anyway, political pressure is how we should phrase that, I guess, towards AT&T that they shouldn't sell Huawei's phones. And they backed out. I still don't know that either party has confirmed that that's exactly what happened, but I think there's plenty of I would say that the information wouldn't have gone forward with that story if they didn't have the information. I guess I should say also later that day, Android Police posted a story that said Verizon was also entertaining carrying one of Huawei's phones, probably the Mate 10 Pro, and they were going to back out as well because of political pressure. So the two big carriers in the U.S. both backing away from Huawei of a day before they were supposed to take the stage and announce that they were moving on with the carrier. So they did have their event and they stood on stage and talked about the Mate 10 Pro and you can buy it unlocked. And at the very end there is Richard Yu, the CEO. Is he like the acting CEO? They do like a rotating CEO thing, right?
That's right. They do. I think he's CEO of consumer, their consumer stuff.
But yeah. So he did the keynote, and at the end of it, he kind of went off script and was like, look, like, this sucks, you know? We want to sell our stuff. We're the number three smartphone maker in the world. Everyone in the U.S. buys phones through carriers, like 90%, 92%, something like that. You know, and he hit on the fact that, like, if you can't buy our phones, which everyone seems to love everywhere else in the world, like, consumers are missing out on choice. And he didn't just, like, drag the U.S. carriers, because obviously they're still going to do whatever they can to try to get involved there. But basically, like, he was saying, like, you know, this sucks for everyone. Sucks because we can't sell phones to you. It sucks because you can't buy our phones, which everyone actually kind of likes at this point. So, anyways, it was a huge story. And if, as you, the consumer, like, if you don't care and it didn't hit with you, it was interesting to us because as we're jumping between press events, talking to all these other press people, like, it was the story. And some people were at, like, pre-briefings with Huawei where they said it was super awkward because it was like the elephant in the room, the whole, you know, at all times. And then obviously that didn't happen. So it kind of ruined Huawei CES, which I feel bad for them. You know, they do make pretty good phones. They've really, really tried to make a big push, and it just hasn't been able to happen. People, the U.S. government is apparently scared to death of Huawei.
Well, they should be. No, I mean, it's just super depressing, at least for them, right? I mean, we've been hyping it up for a little bit. I think the first report about Huawei really coming to U.S. carrier that really had some traction was mid of last year. And so to come all this way and then like the day before something is like made official, have it just get shut down. At least the reports came out to say that it was shut down right before an announcement.
Super, yeah, they were making hold, we think, like at least
a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that that happened and just the fact that U.S. consumers will have, you know, one less option when shopping for a smartphone kind of sucks, because I finally got my hands on the Mate 10 Pro at CES and I was like, oh, this hardware is actually pretty nice. You know, I really liked the Mate 9 and I've liked a couple of Honor's devices. I mean, they make good hardware. I mean, the software has never been like all that great. It's gotten a lot better, believe me. But just the fact that U.S. consumers were almost going to have like another option to say replace HTC or if they didn't like LG's latest or whatever. I mean, it's nice having options. So just the fact that conspiracy theories and the GOP possibly and, you know, Congress are like, no, we don't want our national security at risk because of Huawei. It's a little ridiculous. So I guess, I mean, it's unfortunate.
I mean, I don't know the full history of Huawei. I don't know that they've had a whole bunch of scary security issues where they've been caught doing sneaky things. I don't know for sure. I haven't looked fully into it. I know ZTE has a little bit of a checkered past and their stuff certainly sells here. I think the big point is for consumers, it's unfortunate because, yeah, they make good stuff and people won't be able to buy that. So that sucks. I mean, we're at a time where, you know, you've got all Samsung's phones and Apple's phones, obviously. You can buy those everywhere. The Moto Z2 finally got to all carriers, but it wasn't until this year. HTC doesn't really sell phones at carriers anymore. You know, Google's only at Verizon. LG does sell them everywhere, but we'll talk about this soon. Like, LG might be making fewer phones. Like, you're not even gonna have any choices anymore. Like, you're gonna go to carrier. Like, Huawei could have been that third, fourth, maybe big option to choose from. Like, you walk in and you got Apple, Samsung, hopefully Google one day, and then Huawei. Like, those could have been your big four, right? And now you don't have that. We don't know how long it's going to be if Huawei ever is able to jump in. We still don't know if Google will ever sell outside of Verizon or if they locked into like some massive multi-year exclusive. So you walk into a store and Apple, Samsung, those might be your choices. And LG, an LG phone that no one seems to want to buy. Like, that's kind of it. That sucks. That sucks.
It sucks. Like, as a consumer, it totally sucks.
It does. So anyway, moving out of that, we did hang out with Huawei a little bit anyway, and you know, they obviously couldn't really talk about it, and you could tell everyone was a bit frustrated, rightfully so. Anyway, let's move out of there. The other big story, if you were on hand, there was two. Tuesday, the opening of the show, it rained like crazy. If you follow Tim on Twitter and Instagram, I think he posted a video of like we were on our way to the show, or was it at the end, on our way back?
We were on our way back.
And it had been dumping for a couple of hours. And one of the garages, like outside the link where we got dropped off by the monorail, was just like flooding. It was like a river flowing into like this back alley. So the rain took a bunch of stuff out. Like Google had this huge booth set up at the convention center for the first time, maybe ever, or at least in years. And it was outside, you know, and it wasn't weatherproof. It wasn't covered. It was like out in the open, and they were supposed to show off all this Google Assistant stuff they had done, and they had to shut down their booth for the entire first day because it was raining that big in Las Vegas, which is just not prepared. But like things just were falling apart. Like the convention center was like, there was garbages everywhere because the roof was leaking like crazy and just dripping water on everything. It was a disaster. And at CES, there was a bunch of outdoor stuff, and that just all kind of got taken away for a day. The other thing, though, at the show, the day after the big rainstorm, and then it was sunny and nice and all that, but that rain apparently got into like a converter or something and knocked the power out at the convention center for like 2 hours. We're talking 100,000 people, like potentially having to exit the convention center and hang out outside for 2 hours while they got power back on. So anyway, just like what we were experiencing while we were there, that was like the big talking point. Like we had some meetings with people and they're like, were you over there? Like everyone asked us, I think, during the second half of the day, like, were you there when the power went out? It was apparently a big deal.
It was a huge deal. I feel bad for all the companies. I overheard a few people afterwards saying like, oh, you know, like my company missed out on a lot of meetings because of the power outage and blah, blah. It's like, you know, people aren't there just to show off stuff, but they're there to try and like make money, make deals with buyers and other companies, make agreements for things. And when their halls are shut down for a couple hours and everything's black, it's kind of hard to do business.
Yeah,
and that's rough. And then not only that, but you know, the time it takes to reboot everything. Think about like a booth like Samsung's or LG's, where we're talking thousands of displays that are all perfectly in perfect timing and sync with each other and all this stuff. And when something goes down and they got to reboot all that and get it set up, what a pain in the butt. I hope whoever's like working their IT or AV department got paid handsome, yeah, very well. So. That's rough.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Anyway, so outside of that, like random on-site drama. So LG had a presence there. They had a press conference, and they announced really just that AI is infused in everything they do now. For the most part, though, what we care about is that like Google Assistant is coming. Like they're making a smart speaker. They're making a smart speaker with a touch display. They put it in a new pair of headphones. Did they put it in their fridge? Or was that with Bixby?
Might have just been Bixby.
Okay. But LG TVs are getting Assistant. Anyway, so they announced all that phone, all that stuff at the show. But then they also did, one of their execs ran an interview during the show with Select Press. And he basically said, like, look, we're not going to continue to do like scheduled phone releases any longer. We're not going to do it just because our competitors are releasing a phone. We're not going to do that. He didn't necessarily say like we're no longer doing yearly phone releases, but he certainly hinted at that being a possibility. In other words, you know how we expect like the new G series phone in March, and then we expect the new V series phone like in that like Q4-ish time. That may not happen anymore. In other words, LG said like we may just take like the G6 and just keep creating new variants of it. Like Tim suggested, like maybe just a G6 Pro will release like months later, or a V30 Pro or something like that. you know, and he said, like, probably because we can't sell phones, right? We're not, it's not working. So we got to change something. We can't just keep taking this hit. Like every year or every quarter, I should say, their earnings come out. The rest of the company seems to be doing really great. The mobile division almost loses every quarter, or I think it does. I think like 11 out of the last 12 quarters or something, they've lost money in the mobile division. So that's not good. They obviously need to do something. We've already talked about them potentially rebranding the G series, although that is completely confusing at this point. Some reports say that executives refer to it as a G series. Some people are like, no, it's going to be rebranded. We have no idea what's going on there. But what we do know is LG may no longer just like give us those set phones twice a year. They may mix it up. We may get one a year, none a year. I don't know. It's, so when we were talking earlier about not having choices at carriers, this could really be a big deal. Like if LG just kind of slowly backs up and releases like a flagship phone a year, followed by a bunch of mid-range knockoffs of it, like, again, not great for consumers.
Not great for consumers. Fantastic news for Samsung. They're probably thinking this is the greatest day of our lives. Like, we have zero competition right now in the Android game. No one can even come close to touching us. I mean, not even Pixel, right? We know Pixels are great phones, but they are not moving in the numbers that Galaxy phones from Samsung.
Barrier, yeah.
It's just not possible. Yeah. So Samsung killing the game. Apparently, they will continue to kill the game. They could probably have recalls for the next 2 years and still be number one in the Android world. So,
well, especially if, yeah, these companies keep backing away. Like I said, HTC can't even buy one of their phones that carries really anymore except low-end like U-Life at T-Mobile. But so if HTC's gone, LG's gone, Google's at one carrier, it's like you walk into a store and it really is Apple or Samsung.
Yeah, what LG needs to do is, at least if I was running the company, I would ditch the skin. I would take the Motorola OnePlus approach. I would try and deliver a sleek Android experience with some built-in tweaks. They have good cameras, so, and we know they have decent hardware now with the G6 and the V30. These are good phones. So I would do all that. I would hire an American marketing team. I would pour in like $100 million into advertising, and I would just push it down the American people's throats until they love it. So,
yeah, I don't get why. I'm not a marketing guru. I don't, you know, I'm not big on building brand messages and stuff, but it seems to me like if you push a phone with that clean version of Android and you hammer on the fact that you're getting the best of Google's experience, and then we also tossed in like our own sweet camera and like this cool LG design, like it seems like if you tell people like we're giving you the best that Google has, which you don't get on any other phone outside of like Pixel, right? Which no one knows about anyway, because it's only sold at damn Verizon. But you say like, we're giving you the best of Google and fast updates. Like you're getting that. And then you make sure it has like a great camera and you do some of the other LG things like on top, sort of like you're saying with Motorola. But maybe that just doesn't play well. I don't know. Maybe people have done the research on that. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but it seems like at least it's a different approach to this, like, well, here's like some new video software that no one uses. And like, I don't know.
Ryan Darcy in the chat says, Huawei are the main threat to Samsung here in Europe and Asia. They are. Don't think Huawei do much in the U.S. Exactly. And that's the problem. So maybe at least we're speaking solely about the U.S. here, that Samsung will have zero competition. If LG is backing up and HTC can't seem to do anything right today, so everyone is struggling. Anyone who even had a chance of stepping up to Samsung. So,
yeah, Huawei's actually pretty big everywhere, but here, I mean, they're number three in the world. Like they can't,
exactly,
they can't stop hammering that point home. Like everyone else in the world loves us, and the U.S. carriers won't let us in because we're a carrier-driven wireless market.
We absolutely are.
Unfortunate, but that's just what we are.
We've been telling people for years to try and get in on that unlocked game, but I think
it's just not as easy, right? It's not as easy to get into because you have to pay all full price up front in many situations.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Maybe everyone thinks in America we have like swimming pools full of cash, but I don't know if you all know, but everyone in America is completely riddled with debt. So we can't afford to do all these unlocked devices for $1,000. It's just not going to happen.
So that was big LG news. The other news that came out from the show around the show was that their payment system, LG Pay or LG Wallet, I don't know which one we're going with at this point, will probably arrive with the next LG flagship in the US by June-ish. Well, I should say their phone could launch well before June, but LG Pay could be here by June. I don't know if anyone cares, but it's similar to Samsung Pay in that you should be able to use it at most credit card readers and things like that. I don't think that's another selling point. I mean, it's a selling point. It's not like a huge selling point.
Yeah, I don't even think Samsung really uses it all that much in their own marketing with MST. So the way Samsung is called magnetic secure transfer, LG's is called wireless magnetic communication. It's the same thing. It should just basically act like a credit card. So it should work at almost any terminal, which already makes it better than Google Pay, aka Android Pay, and Apple Pay, not having to rely on NFC. So that's a big deal. But is it going to be a reason why someone buys an Android phone or an LG phone? I don't think so.
Probably not. And they're so far behind at this point. I mean, it's taken years for Google and Samsung to add banks and card support and all that stuff. LG's starting fresh now. Like, they're so far behind. It'd be a tough battle there. Speaking of wireless carrier stuff, though, OnePlus was at the show. They weren't showing anything off. They just held some meetings, threw a little cocktail party, and had like at least one interview with CNET, from what I can tell. And they told CNET that, yeah, we're ready to potentially start talking to U.S. carriers. So you guys know OnePlus, they sell their phones direct, unlocked. They only work on T-Mobile and AT&T here in the U.S. But they said, yeah, we're ready to maybe approach that. Obviously, they're not going to do it unless they have, they said, the right opportunity and right timing. Then they would potentially make that deal with a carrier. Look, good luck, OnePlus. I like OnePlus phones. I'm not saying this because I have this thing against OnePlus. What I'm saying is good luck, OnePlus. If Huawei, the number three wireless or smartphone maker in the world, can't get on a U.S. carrier, I'm not sure how OnePlus is going to pull that off. They're also Chinese, by the way, right? They're a Chinese manufacturer. Well, so is Huawei. And that's probably part of the deal there in terms of the political pressure to not allow that. So OnePlus, smaller company, also out of China. I just can't imagine. They also know nothing about Verizon and Sprint, right? Because their phones don't work in India. So they're pigeonholed then into AT&T and T-Mobile unless they really branch out the networking tech in their phones. So AT&T already says basically like, yeah, no, we're not interested, I would think. T-Mobile maybe. But that's just, you're a small guy. I don't know how you break it. Like Sony couldn't do it. Like Sony tried for years, right? They failed miserably. HTC's backed away and the carriers won't carry their phones because they can't sell them. Motorola did finally branch back out, but for years they were basically sucked back to just Verizon. It's a tough game here in the US wireless industry. So if OnePlus can somehow get on a carrier, cool. The other thing I worry though is what happens to that really clean software experience we like. Like they have to agree, obviously, to like bloatware and all that crap. I mean, they're not a power player like Google. I mean, and it took Google a while to be able to shut most of that down, right? Samsung still has tons of bloatware and they're the biggest. So kind of worries me. But at the same time, if OnePlus wants to grow, they obviously need to try. I don't know how much success they'll have, but.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, we've seen bigger companies than OnePlus try and break into the U.S. market, and they're all backing down. Yeah. So good luck. I mean, if you try getting into Samsung's Kool-Aid, they're not going to appreciate it. Samsung will just back you down. Interestingly, though, Dez, Ask Dez from T-Mobile, he sent out a tweet yesterday. And of course, I had to give him a hard time about it. He said, I'm thinking I need to pick up a OnePlus and give it a whirl on the T-Mobile network. I know lots of you are using OnePlus products on T-Mobile. What's your experience like so far? And what would you hope to see improved? And of course, I was like, oh, well, there we go. We just saw this report saying OnePlus is going to talk to U.S. carriers. And now you have Dez, who's like their main product guy, talking about buying a OnePlus and trying it out on their network. So I was like, man,
timing.
Yeah, not too coincidental at all. But he, of course, replied and said, not at all. As you may have seen, we've been working hard on your bring your own device support. I used one way back in the beginning and the experience was subpar, but there's a lot of people tweeting me about using them on our network and I'd like to see how it's improved. And of course, you know, trying to cover up his tracks, even though we're on to him. But
we're on to you, Dez. We're on to you.
So on to you. But he's a Portland native, by the way.
Is he? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. So I think it would be cool. Even if it does come to T-Mobile, I think that's cool. Like, I would actually like to know, maybe just do a poll for our OnePlus owners. Like, what carrier are you using your OnePlus on? Because obviously it has to be one or the other.
I bet it's like 90% T-Mobile.
Exactly. So it would almost make sense, you know, maybe in OnePlus's mind to be like, okay, we could just have T-Mobile be like our exclusive carrier partner, and it opens it up to more people. But I'm sure there's a lot of people on the T-Mobile network who don't know about OnePlus.
Right.
So, I mean, that's more customers, right? Yeah. And then you, maybe in years later, you can work in those CDMA bands and have to deal with Verizon certification and all this good stuff. So, but yeah, I'm excited about it, but I'm not going to get my hopes up at this time.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest anyone get hopes up about it happening, but it's good that they're ready to, you know, try to grow that by talking to carriers, but... Yeah, your carriers are mean, man.
Yeah.
Not nice. All right, switching gears a little bit. Google was surprisingly everywhere at CES this year. We talked about they had that big booth that got rained out, so we never did make it there because day two we just weren't at the convention center. But they were just showing off everything that had Assistant, other stuff that was going on. And we'll talk more about Assistant later, but they had some other stuff. Like, they announced smart displays. And smart displays are essentially Google Assistant speakers with a display. So think Amazon Echo Show, Amazon Echo Spot. We finally have Google Home style units with a display. Google didn't show off their own product, though I'd assume they'll probably make one. But what we did get was a prototype or early model from Lenovo. We saw one from LG. JBL had at least some press images of one. And then Sony said they're making one, or at least Google said Sony's making one, but they had no like pictures, prototypes, anything. So what you get, though, is Google Home or Assistant Smarts in that speaker like you guys may have now with Home or Max or Mini. And then you got a display, which will show like your calendar, and you can pull up directions and get recipes and watch YouTube, which you can't do on Amazon's products anymore. It was kind of just a brief overview Google gave for it. It is a touch screen, so you can't touch stuff. Obviously, you can play music, but they didn't really show like the full vision. So it feels like, let's announce this, and like Lenovo showed theirs off, and it's not coming out until this summer. So it feels like there's like months and months still of all sorts of polishing they need to do, getting everything ready. But the cool thing is, like, all these other companies are making this stuff now. So not only will we probably get one from Google, I'd imagine, in the fall when they do, or in the early winter. October is the winter, right? No, just Q4.
Yeah.
I'll say that. When they do their next hardware event. But everybody else will have one, too. So you're going to have lots of choice. So we looked at Lenovo's, and it's kind of cool because it stands upright, or you can lay it down. They were showing an early version that even if you stood it upright, they were like, it's not going to auto rotate, just so you know, because we don't even like built that in. Like, that's how early we are on this stuff. But either way, if you were looking for something with a display that's not an Amazon product, they are coming, and there's going to be a lot of them, which is pretty cool.
And we're excited about it.
Yes, we are. Because like, I have an Echo Show right here under this monitor. I never use it anymore because I don't like it at all. I have one in my kitchen, and I never use it. So I would love a Google one because I would probably actually talk to it. All right. In other Google news, they announced that Android Pay and Google Wallet are sort of re-merging together. So years ago, they separated them out. Google Wallet became just like a person-to-person payment system. Android Pay became the actual payment system that you use like in stores, for credit card, with credit cards, all of that stuff. So that happened. Now we're back, and it's Google Pay, although you'll see it listed as the Google G with Pay. It's actually called Google Pay, though, not GPay. It's, as far as we know, it's just a rebrand. So I don't know. Like, I don't know that we're getting a new app that like pushes Wallet and Android Pay together. They didn't say that. They just said we're going to bring them under like the same branding. So I don't know if that means Google Wallet's going to be called Google Pay Wallet. And then we'll also just have an Android Pay app will just be renamed to Google Pay. I'm not totally sure how that's going to work. They haven't really said. But either way, all of Google's payment products will now be under this Google Pay umbrella. I know I probably made that sound way more confusing than it needed to be, but that's what all of Google's payment stuff, like in Chrome, on websites, on apps, when you're using Google Pay, Google to pay for something, it's called Google Pay.
It makes sense. I like the move.
Yeah, it's much cleaner than all this wallet, pay, whatever.
Exactly. Just put it under one category, one name. Just make it easier for the consumer to understand.
Yep, I would agree. All right, in terms of Google VR news, we got a couple of things, actually. Lenovo showed off their standalone VR headset, the Mirage Solo. And do you want to talk about that? I really didn't look that much into it, to be honest.
Yeah, of course. Lenovo Mirage Solo, standalone Daydream headset. So instead of having to throw your phone into a Daydream headset, the ones that exist right now, this thing has all the stuff you need. It's got a Snapdragon 835 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of built-in storage, 110-degree field of view. It's got the LCD display already in there, quad HD resolution, 2560 by 1440. And the battery is apparently pretty big. We didn't get like a specific milliamp hour size or watt or anything, but it is, they say, up to 7 hours of playing time on a single charge. It's got a headphone jack, and it has Google's World Sense, which is basically just an array of sensors that allow the headset to let you, the user, sort of duck and move and get a real sense of like motion when you're inside of these AR or VR experiences. So you can really move around in there, move throughout the room, blah, blah, blah. Kind of like Vive. It's just a much better Daydream thing. The thing is, the app developers will have to go through all of their applications that they've already done and say rebuild it to either support World Sense or create new experiences inside those apps to take advantage of World Sense. A lot of apps, you know, they don't already let you duck and move and all that. And that's like a completely different dimension in terms of when you're building for VR.
For sure.
So that's a real pain. Seems really cool if you're into VR. I mean, I'm sure this thing would make me throw up if I'm not using Benadryl, just like any other VR headset right now. But it's going to launch Q2 this year, priced at $400, which doesn't seem terrible. But again, the only problem is that I think Android's sort of library right now of VR apps are kind of weak. Like, there's not a lot of like awesome, legit experiences like you'll find on HTC Vive. I mean, there's something about the graphics and the experiences on Vive compared to Android VR and Daydream. They just don't really stack up. Like, it's definitely getting better, but they're not quite equal at this time. But again, $400 for the whole thing. You basically got the phone power inside. Like
built inside, yeah.
Yeah, but then you can only use it for this and you can't use it as a phone. So I don't know, like, maybe how people weigh that.
Yeah, you really got to be interested in VR to spend $400.
Absolutely. But yeah.
Could be cool. We'll definitely put a spin once it comes out. Oh, for sure. This year. All right, so on top of that, in VR related news, they announced new VR 180 cameras. So VR 180 is kind of like Google's push with, so they announced VR 180 a while ago, but it's basically like a simpler push of VR content to people. And so what they've done is they've created cameras that are basically like point and shoots that shoot in VR 180. And so it's so that you'll take them everywhere with you and just snap pictures and take videos with it like you would if you had any other point and shoot camera. They can auto upload to YouTube. So you can instant share this stuff if you want to. I think you can pair it with your phones, I believe, too, if you want to Wi-Fi direct transfer stuff. But the thought is that capturing all of your memories and stuff with these cameras, which are little handheld guys, is a good idea so that in the future, when you want to relive memories, you get that like full immersive experience as you do that. All you need to do is slap on cardboard or regular Daydream headset. Obviously it should work with the new standalone headset and things like that. And there's two cameras so far. One's from Lenovo, one's from Yi Technologies. And they didn't really give us pricing, but Lenovo said the thing should cost less than $300 and should ship in Q2, probably with their Daydream standalone headset. I mean, the stuff looks kind of cool because it's like dead simple VR creation. You know, like, I'm not a big fan of 360 cameras because I think that experience sucks. What I don't like about 360 cameras is they record full 360, which, yes, is kind of cool in thought. But when you get into, even in a VR environment, and you go in 360, like, I mean, fully turning all the way around is kind of a pain. But if you don't have a headset on, you have to like spin like a screen around and you don't get to see everything at all times. Like, I'm not a big fan of 360 content. With VR 180, you're supposed to just kind of see it all in this range right here. So you don't have to do a bunch of extra work and stuff. So it should be cool, assuming, you know, you really want to preserve memories and stuff in a VR environment. But at least they're trying to do it in an affordable way.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's VR 180. What else? So Google also announced, actually, that's kind of it. Like I said, we'll talk more about Assistant later. In Samsung news, though, they did confirm at the show that the Galaxy S9 will be announced at MWC. So we know when that's happening now. So no more weird rumors about launch time frame. It should be unveiled at MWC. MWC kicks off on February 26th, so I'd imagine they'll announce the phone on either the 24th or 25th, usually a day or two before the show kicks off. So,
not too shabby. As a Cybe Saver, CB Saver, something. Android Auto, yeah, updated with Google Assistant.
It did. Yep. Android Auto, which was confusing, right? We wrote that up and a whole bunch of people went, wait a minute, this is already in Android Auto. So it's official. Technically kind of different. This is like the hey G-O-O-G-L-E command and maybe just slightly more commands available to you. It was very confusing.
It was very hard to follow.
It was. Either way, it's official now with Android Auto. Maybe it wasn't official before. So odd. All right, so Qualcomm announced quite a bit of stuff, actually. What stood out to me at the show was they created, well, they're really getting into, they're trying to get into everything, right? Like, they got kits to make VR headsets, but they also announced kits for two categories I think are going to be really important. One is a Bluetooth audio SoC that'll allow anyone to basically make wireless earbuds that are truly wireless. So hopefully Google's like buying this from them now to actually make real ones that aren't the Pixel Buds. But it's a whole kit that allows you to have better connection, performance, all that stuff, way better battery life in wireless earbuds. So a bunch of companies have made true wireless earbuds. I don't know that any of them have been that great yet. I mean, I think Apple still, its AirPods are still probably the best. But just in general and Bluetooth stuff that we would use on Android, nobody's really made anything that great. They all have pretty big flaws, but Qualcomm has like a kit that companies can basically use or a platform to hopefully do that. So if you're interested in that, Qualcomm is going to allow people to do that. And it'll also work with assistants and stuff like that too. And then they also announced a smart audio platform, which we're also going to talk about later because it's apparently one of our best stuff.
Nice.
But Qualcomm just like they were here. And obviously, they don't necessarily announce consumer products. I mean, at one time, they made that really terrible smartwatch that I kind of liked. But what they do is they enable companies to make stuff. So like Qualcomm, I think a lot of us just know for Snapdragon and then probably also the modems that are in phones. But they're now getting involved in everything. Like they're taking all of their computing expertise and helping anyone build almost anything they want. Like Tim and I could probably use a Qualcomm kit and build like a smart home speaker, or we could probably make Bluetooth headphones now if we knew anything about that. But like that's what Qualcomm is allowing people to do, which I think is really cool. All right, and then in just another note, Ring, the company that was once only known for doorbells, they announced a whole bunch of stuff like new stick-up cams. Their Ring alarm will actually apparently ship, even though they were sued by ADT. I'm not sure how that worked out, but what I thought was cool is they're doing outdoor lighting now, and also Philips Hue announced outdoor lighting. So if you're a big smart home lighting guy, both Ring and Philips Hue announced smart outdoor lighting that'll connect, that you can control with everything. You can set it to go off on motion and all of that stuff. So anyway, I'm a smart home nerd, so it stood out to me. But if you're a smart home nerd as well, we're gonna get outdoor lighting, which I think is huge,
super legit
right now. I have Philips Hue like bulbs outside, and I didn't know I wasn't supposed to use them outside.
Uh-oh.
Well, there's two of them on my porch. The rest of them are covered. They're not like getting rained on, right?
You'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll be fine, I'm sure. All right. Anything else before we get into our best of stuff?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I guess, I mean, that was a pretty solid roundup right there of CES, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff. There was no massive announcements. But there was definitely some cool stuff. I mean, there was some stuff that was announced that will change some computing platforms and wireless stuff and VR stuff and smart home speakers that like that. Like there was a bunch of stuff announced that in 8 months or a year out, like it'll change everything. Like in not very long, we'll all be able to buy a smart home assistant speaker with Google Assistant, and it'll probably be dirt cheap, and you'll be able to buy it from whoever you like the most, which is good.
Scott asks, could you guys do more on smart home products? Not sure if that's too far out of Droid Life. No, I mean, we talk about smart home stuff all the time. Like we talk about the smart Wi-Fi, the mesh network stuff. We talk about Philips Hue's. I have an Echo Bee. Kellen's got a Nest. I mean, we do. Do you have a Ring or something else? What else do you have? What's your smart?
I have Ring, Nest stuff, Philips Hue stuff, Google Home stuff.
Yeah.
It's actually something we should do more of. And it's probably something I'll start talking more about this year, because it is one of those things I actually really, really like playing with. So, yes, Scott.
Fine, I guess we can talk more about smart home. I thought we were already talking about it quite a bit.
I think like we talk about announcements and stuff. We don't often do reviews of it, which I think is probably maybe what he's getting at. Like we don't like we talk about when stuff's available, and then we kind of just move on to back to smartphones.
Gotcha.
I think we could, just because I think it's one of those really fun growing areas, and I happen to be one of those people that forks out stupid amounts of money just to have it all.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Alex, real quick before we dive into best of, Alex asks, what's your opinion on TickWatch? Didn't we just recently discuss TickWatch two nights ago?
Yeah, we haven't really played with TickWatch. So Mobvoi is the company that makes TickWatch, and their newest watches are TickWatch E and S, I believe. They're really, really affordable. You can buy them through Amazon. I think they initially kickstarted them. But this company's made watches in the past. They just kickstarted, I think, like Pebble was doing, just to get the funding for it. We haven't played with them. We've kind of moved quite a bit away from Android Wear because the platform is really bad. Most of the watches aren't very good. With that said, most people that have these Tick watches like them. They're reviewed pretty well. You've got some color choices. They've got most of the features you want. I don't know if either has NFC, which is still something that is driving me insane. But we sat down with a reader of the site for dinner the other night, and he had one. And I think he really liked it.
I mean, it seemed cool to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think either of us have much of an opinion, because we just don't really talk about Android Wear that much anymore, because no one makes them outside of the fashion brands. And the platform just is kind of stalled, which sucks.
Yeah, Android Wear. I mean, then that was my bold prediction for 2018, is that Google was just going to kill Android Wear, even though we saw Skagen and Kate Spade and both Fossil brands launch these Android Wear devices. I was like, what the heck? I mean, Fossil seems to be like carrying the torch right now. They've got a crap ton of Android Wear products. So good luck to the Fossil group and all their brands.
They do have a lot of brands, that's for sure.
A ton. So yeah, we'll talk more about smart home, and I'll try and keep updated on TickWatch.
All right, so let's talk our best of list. So we put together a best of list of CES stuff that just stood out to us that we thought was extra cool, that we either can't wait to see later on in future products, or hopefully talk somebody into just giving us one, because they'll probably be too expensive and we won't be able to afford them. But the list is the Synaptix in-display fingerprint reader. So Synaptix got quite a bit of hype leading up to it. Actually, how many years does it feel like we've been talking about Synaptix? What we're talking about is phone like this.
Phone like that.
Reader under the display, like right there. So Synaptix has built this technology. I think Qualcomm's been working on it as well. I don't know if they ditched it or what happened there, but I think they were working on a version too. Anyway, Synaptix seems to be first out of the gate with one in an actual phone that will probably be sold at some point. So they were showing off their technology on a Vivo phone that didn't really have a name. It was just like Vivo phone with in-display fingerprint. It was kind of weird. So who knows if this phone will actually ever go on sale. It certainly won't in the US. But we did get a play with it, and it was a little bit like playing with the future. it works like a fingerprint reader. Like if you had a fingerprint reader, I don't have a Samsung phone with one on hand, but if you had a fingerprint reader right here in your phone, like say you had it from, you know, like a normal fingerprint reader touchpad, like you just light up the phone and put your finger there and it shows this little fingerprint outline. And then you put your finger there and it unlocks the phone. It worked pretty well. Like, I got to set it up, and you set it up just like you do, you know, you rotate your thumb around or whatever. It was pretty cool. And it, you know, frees up the phone to have an all display front and also the back to look really clean without that extra touchpad. It was cool. I can't wait for other people to build it in. I don't know who's going to do that first. We know it's not Samsung. The Galaxy S9 pictures and renders we've seen all show a rear mounted one. So it's not Samsung. Hopefully it's maybe Google or something. I don't know if they'll do it either, but hopefully somebody else does it, like a big enough brand that we could see it. But I mean, it was cool. You played with it too. What did you think?
I thought it was super dope. It was like playing with the future, like you said. I mean, I've seen some people say, like, why not just leave it on the back, you know, or blah, 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 blah. I mean, it works just as good, if not better, than with on the back. Like, I understand that their point, like, with the fingerprint reader on the back, you have your hand on the phone. The index finger naturally goes to that middle position, but your thumb, when you're using the phone, is like pretty much always on the display anyway. You know, you're using stuff. Why not just have it right there near the bottom? I mean, it works fine. You know, it either or, as long as it's not on the complete bottom of the display on a bottom chin with its own little touchpad, like, this is way better than that. Scott in the chat said it looks so slow. It seemed just as fast as any other fingerprint reader we've experienced. It did misread a couple of times when the person who was providing us with the demo was trying to do it. But once Kellen set up his finger, it was fast. You just place it on there and it unlocks. It seemed really cool to me. And I love that when the display was off or at a certain angle, you could see the optical reader beneath it, beneath the glass itself. And it just looked cool. But when the display was on, you couldn't notice anything was there. And especially when you put your thumb on there and it's trying to read it, it does this awesome circuitry animation, all neon blue, looking like Tron. It was totally awesome. So yeah,
it was just cool because when you looked at the phone, there was no fingerprint reader there. And then you turned the display on and there it said, like, no, I am here. And then you touched it and it read your finger. So it's just like that kind of future tech that we just kind of geek out about. While I'm with some people in the chat, and the rear one will probably always be my preferred placement. The fact that, like, we can bury one in a display and then I don't have to see one ever again, I like that idea too. And there are arguments that the front one is a better placement. I know some people love front ones and they hate rear ones and vice versa. I get it. But it was just cool to play with the technology that I think we've talked about for so damn long.
Exactly. I mean, I'm happy just to see it and know that it's not vaporware or something like that. I mean, it exists and it was cool and it can always be improved upon. I've seen some people say 0.7 seconds. I guess that's supposed to be slow. It's like the first, it's technically, I guess, the second generation of this kind of mass produced solution. So it's not like it can't be improved upon. I mean, come on, people. Like, I mean, I think it's better at this moment than, say, Face ID, which is on every iPhone 10 right now and seems better than that. So at least you can have multiple profiles with this and I don't have to, like, pick up a phone and hold it to my face. I can just be on the table and be like, say my girlfriend wants to pick up my phone and use it. I can just, you know, go over there and unlock it for her. I don't have to, like, take it away from her. Like, I'm, you know, trying to hide something and, you know, it's ridiculous. Come on, people. It can get better, but it's already pretty good. So
it's still pretty early on a unknown phone. Give it some time. We're just talking about the fact that we saw this concept actually working on a real phone.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool. That's like the whole point. It's just cool.
It's just cool, man.
And again, like Tim just said, it's way the F better than any stupid facial recognition garbage that everyone's going to copy from Apple.
Yeah. Way the F.
Or we can just keep it on the back, bury it in metal or something.
Yeah, that's fine too. I mean, I'm cool with the back. It's not like I don't hate that. So as long as...
cool tech that we got to see.
Exactly. As long as no one, like everyone, adopts the whole Face ID, the iris scanning and stuff, like that's what I don't want. I don't want us all to follow Apple. It's just not necessary.
I will quit smartphones if everyone ditches fingerprint and gives me facial recognition garbage.
Yeah.
I'll quit.
All right, you'll quit.
About that life. All right, anyway, moving on, because everyone in the chat is hating on the fingerprint reader. NVIDIA announced the big format gaming display. And we got to play. Well, you got to play on one.
I got to play on one.
We got to watch one. They are... All right, so to run down specs. Okay, so NVIDIA announced big format gaming display, and it's essentially like, what would you call it? Like a, it's almost like a kit they're licensing to TV company, yeah. Right? So even though this isn't technically a TV because it doesn't have a tuner inside of it, they have to call it a display. But they're essentially licensing these kits out to, so far, HP, Acer, and Asus are all confirmed to be making their own version of this display. But the standard is 65-inch, 4K, 120 hertz, HDR, 1,000 nits, DCI P3 color. It's got NVIDIA Shield built in, G-Sync. And it just looks nuts. Tim got to play some Destiny 2 on it with HDR turned on. We also got to just see people play it. We saw all three TVs from those companies. The HP Omen was the one that we actually got to see in action for the most part. We have no idea how much these things are going to cost. My guess is between $3,000 and $3,500. They didn't even hint at it. We don't know when they're coming out, supposedly later this year, but we don't have like exact timeline on that. And the point is, they want these to be like your gaming display, not necessarily a TV, although it would look great as a TV also. But like the early setups they showed, it was like a dude in his like gaming den, like pretty close to this giant 65-inch display, just going ham. Like it seems so silly and over the top. And then you see one in person, you just go, oh my God, I want this thing.
It was pretty stupid. I mean, the fact that I already don't use like a standard TV. Technically I have a Vizio 4K TV, but I don't use Comcast cable or anything like that. Like all I use is YouTube TV, Netflix. I mean, those are like my basic consumption tools. Yes. And those are already built in to the BFGD, and the BFGD has 120 hertz refresh rate, 1,000 nit brightness. Thing was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And when you're sitting there in front of 65 inches, you know, you're only sitting a few feet away because apparently this is like a gaming display and they think you should be right up on that. Even though like years ago I was at an IKEA and they said the perfect sort of how far away from the TV you should be without hurting your eye is like the fist covers up the entire display, like at fully extended.
Okay.
And I was like, oh man, I really got to be far away from that. You got to be two rooms away. Yeah. But either way, it was awesome. I'm not a PC player, unfortunately, so I'm trying to like play Destiny 2 with ASDW and mouse and all nerded up.
PS4 or Xbox up to it, and it would still look great.
Exactly. And it had the HP Omen at least had like four or five HDMI ports, had a display port, and then a whole bunch of other cool stuff. Yeah,
it's a damn TV. They just can't call it one because at the FCC, if it doesn't have a tuner.
So exactly. So I don't know. I'll definitely be on the market for one as long as it's not over like $5,000 or something, you know, completely stupid.
$3,000 to $3,500. What do you think for price? I've seen in the chat some people say $4,000, $5,000.
I'm leaning like $4,500 maybe. I could totally see $3,500 to $40,000. I'm just gonna give it a big range because again we have three makers: Asus, Acer, and HP. All and these are LCD panels. I just have to assume. And also that just note, the only difference that's going to be between the Acer, HP, and Asus are sort of the designs, the ports, and all that stuff. All the displays are exactly the same. They're made by the same manufacturer, so there will be zero difference in actual display quality or the specs for the actual display.
Right. It'll just be whatever those makers want to do to like some of their other software that happens. Over. Yeah,
exactly. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. Like these displays won't differ in any technical aspect, that's fantastic about it. So I would think the pricing has to be somewhat different. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think like Asus has their gaming displays. They're like 35 inch or whatever widescreen. Those are like $1,500. And so you think 4K, 65-inch, 120 hertz, G-Sync?
Yeah.
That's like $5,000 easily.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'll definitely be trying to get one. No promises, but I'm going to try. I mean, just because it can replace my TV, because all I have is a Shield TV connected to it already. So it could replace my entire entertainment thing, or I could set it up on my wall right here. Yeah. I could put it behind me. I could do so many cool things. So we'll see.
They were wild. I mean, that's one of those fun things that NVIDIA does, is like, they just kind of make ridiculous stuff sometimes for gaming specific stuff and just go, whatever, it's cool, we built it. But they've got people on board. Like I said, HP, Acer, and Asus are all said they're making some. So it'll come. We just don't know.
Yeah. Tom Lilly in the chat says PS4 or Xbox won't be able to push 4K resolutions at 120 hertz. That's fine. However, the Xbox One X that I have, it will support 4K at 60 with AMD's FreeSync, at least. So you're definitely going to experience something a little bit better in terms of just like what you would see on, say, a standard 60 hertz refresh rate like TV. It really just depends on how much you want to spend and what you think. There are scientists who say you can't even see anything better than like 100 hertz. So I just think it's awesome. I just want this. I was recently shopping for a monitor, and Kellen knows this, like, the monitor market kind of sucks, because if you think about what you want, like, you want 4K, you want the highest refresh rate. Like, those things actually just don't exist, or they do just for a stupid amount of money. Like, the monitor market has not caught up to, say, like, the smartphone market in terms of like the evolution, how quickly things are changing in that space.
I mean, you can buy high refresh rate TVs at 4K for pretty cheap these days. Monitors, for whatever reason,
I just don't know if the money's there for them or whatever. You would think it would be. Everyone's a gamer these days, it seems like. So
apparently.
Yeah. I got the Xbox One X specifically for the 4K, for the future, for this HDR movement that's going on. So right now, this NVIDIA big FN gaming display is like right up my alley, dude. So I'll be on the lookout. And once we get pricing, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah. All right, so another product we really like, well, two products from a company called NanoLeaf. So we've talked about NanoLeaf in the past. Tim actually has their, I think it's their most recent lighting setup. They used to call it Aurora, but I don't think they're calling it Aurora anymore. But NanoLeaf, they make these triangular lighting panels, smart lighting panels, and you can combine them into like your own shape and design. And they work with Google Assistant now, right? So you can turn them off and on Google Assistant. You can change the colors, their color panels. They're really cool. And they sync with music and stuff. Don't you have the version that syncs with music?
I do.
So it's just a cool product in general. Well, they were there showing off other stuff. So the first thing they showed off was the NanoLeaf remote. So it's like a 12-sided die. And this sounds silly. It's a wireless 12-sided die. And as you rotate it to different sides of the die, which are all numbered 1 through 12, it'll automatically change the color of, or color profile, or whatever mood, or whatever you've set on your NanoLeaf. So you rotate it over here and it's like blue, rotate over here, it could be pink, and you can customize all that. And again, that all happens wirelessly. Like, you just hold this thing in your hand and you rotate it wherever you want and it changes the color. And then if you find the color you want it brighter or darker, you just rotate the thing in your hand like this, sideways, and it does this subtle like haptic feedback vibration to let you know that that's happening. And then there's also one spot you can put on that'll turn your light on and off. It seems really unnecessary and it seems like a toy, but when you actually just play with the thing and watch it in action, and then you get that little habit, it was just a cool like piece of technology that was shown off.
I really think it's cool. Yeah. Like right now I got the Nano. I know exactly. I've got the NanoLeaf set up, and what's nice is, so the rhythm is what you're talking about, the music kind of control. Yeah. It's just a single little attachment you plug into the panel you've already got, and then you just turn it on. It starts listening and it puts all this, you know, the music or the sound, whatever it hears, right into your array of LED triangles. So definitely awesome. I got to get that little remote. But then
I don't know if they said how much it's going to cost, did they?
What, the little remote? I think it's going to be like $89. Like, it wasn't going to be that bad, I don't think. I mean, the panels already, it might even be more, it might even be like $99. I don't know. The panels themselves, like, NanoLeaf is not cheap. Right. Maybe when they get older, more mature, and they start mass producing at a higher rate, if that's a thing, they can bring down the price. But right now, like, it's not cheap to get into the NanoLeaf game. It's like $250 for a starter pack.
So it's, I'm looking on Amazon, it's $220 for a starter pack on Amazon anyway. But if you want the rhythm kit, it jumps up to $299. But that's not cheap at all. I mean, that's pretty expensive.
No, that's not cheap at all. But I mean,
so yeah, that thing's probably gonna be like $100.
Yeah, but at least it's cool. I mean, if you've got the say, I think about it for the people who just want to make like the dopest man cave on the block, or who someone who really wants to put time into like a in-home like entertainment kind of theater experience room. Like Nanoleaf is like one of the ways you can do it. I mean, you could really set a scene with these bad boys, and with the music, with the rhythm matching and all that stuff, you could get some sweet effects going on. And
if you had a big old TV, and you could almost spread these out, or if you had enough around a TV, and mm-hmm. then you set the music up and the lighting, yeah, you could do some cool stuff.
Yeah. If you had this coupled with an NVIDIA BFGD, you're pretty much living the good life, I'd say.
And they told us it runs off, was it a single AA battery or two AA batteries?
The remote? Yeah. It was a single AAA battery.
Oh, okay. I thought you said AA. But he said it lasts for like up to 2 years on a single battery. And that's with it lighting up all the time. Because as you rotate the thing around, it turns the color you want it to be.
Yeah, and haptic too. I mean, it's not, you know, it takes energy to create a vibration. It's pretty impressive. And I'm pretty sure it was a AAA, just a single AAA, I believe.
So the other cool thing they showed off, which they didn't actually announce, it just happened to be in their booth on a wall, was like their next generation lighting panel. And instead of being the triangular version that like Tim has, we were talking about, they're just square, like four, they're kind of like four panel tiles, I would say. And they must attach pretty similar. They had kind of worked together. They kind of said this is like some janky like thing we just hacked together to show, but they're touch sensitive. So like, you could just like brush your hand across it and the thing would just like light up like blue all the way across like in a row. It was nuts. I thought it was super cool. And they're square, so they're probably easier to build around rather than the triangles that like their initial version was. He also says, we talked to their CEO. We didn't realize that we were talking to their CEO, and he is the CEO. He also said that with these new panels, they can support up to 1,000 connected to each other. And right now, the version they have out only supports 30. So they're going from 30 to 1,000. You could outfit entire rooms in these things and like touch it on one end and it would just like blow ripple up all the way around the entire place. It was so cool.
Yeah. So basically, that's my dream. Instead of these like stupid foam things behind me, like just do the whole freaking room of just Nanoleaf.
Like during the show, you just got it going
ripples. Pulsing or something. Oh, dude, that, and you match that with the BFGD in your home theater, man, you're good to go. So that was super cool.
It
was
cool. And they don't know when it's coming out, how much. They just told us we just want to get it right first.
Yeah.
So it was definitely some prototype pre-production way early, but the touch stuff was working. And what did he say? I don't think this was off the record, but what did he say about your current controller and future update to it? This was not off the record. No. He was talking about the current controller on like the Nanoleaf you have, that it actually has a motion sensor built in. Didn't he say that?
Oh no, it's got a like a Doppler radar or something like that, or it's got some type of radar.
I thought it was like a motion thing, so that they just have to enable it. But it could basically like, if you walk into a room, like you could just light up all of your stuff. And I think he said that's built into the controller now.
Yeah, there's something pre-built in the controller. I just, like you said, I forget what he's mentioned, but it was something cool.
Yeah, but it just hasn't been enabled yet. They're just working out the software for it. So they're doing some cool stuff in terms of like home smart lighting.
I'm excited.
Yeah. And so Nanoleaf remote will be out eventually. The other stuff might be a while. So one of the things we gave Best of CES to was Qualcomm's smart audio platform. So I was talking earlier about how they make all these kits for stuff. But what Qualcomm's done is they created a smart audio platform, which is a kit to make smart speakers. So not only does it do Google Assistant, but it could do Amazon Alexa or Microsoft's Cortana. And if you are an OEM and you pick up this platform or kit from Qualcomm, you get to choose which one you want. Like, it's certified or whatever it needs to be for any different assistants. You could have one, you can make one with assistant, you make one with Alexa, whatever you want to do, and they even have a reference design. So we gave it Qualcomm a best stuff for it, just because like they're enabling everyone to build a smart speaker. So if you don't like Google Home or Mini or Max, you didn't like, you know, what this company showed off, or you were hoping some other random company, like maybe Bang & Olufsen, you wanted them to make one. Like, they can now. They don't have to be a technology company like Google in order to do it. They can just use Qualcomm. So I just thought it was great that Qualcomm's allowing people, which I mentioned earlier, to just be able to build this stuff easier and hopefully more affordable with less investment in like design and
R&D.
And all that stuff. So we did give that to them. And they said the first one built off it that they could at least talk about was one of LG's. And it's the one without the display, but LG announced a Google Assistant speaker called the Thin Q with Google Assistant or something like that. So we'll see.
Yeah. And I guess before we dive deeper into the best of, I just want to send an apology out to all these companies. We don't do trophies, so we don't have a fancy trophy or a medal for you to show off.
No, we don't have fancy trophies. I'm sorry, we don't have cheap trophies and medals to hand out to you that you can.
It's kind of ridiculous.
I know. Yeah. On a similar note, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but we gave Lenovo Smart Display a best of CES because even though there was Lenovo, LG, Sony, and JBL that all had these, Lenovo's just struck us as the coolest because it comes in 8-inch or 10-inch sizes. They gave us a price, $199 for the 8-inch, $249 for the 10-inch. They also told us it should ship by July. And you can lay it down or stand it up. Has a really minimal modern design. And so it seems like the best of the two. It has two 10-watt speakers in it. It's got a full HD display. I think one of them, maybe it was JBL's, was only an HD display. So Lenovo's giving you a 1080p display. It's also built on another of Qualcomm's platform, the Home Hub platform. So it's got a Snapdragon 624 in it, 2 gig RAM, 4 gig storage. They all have front cameras for video chatting and stuff like that. But theirs just seem to be the most specced out and look potentially the best just because it gives you that flexibility. So
I'm pumped.
Yeah. And then finally, and we've talked about this throughout the show, but we gave Google Assistant a best of CES because it was everywhere. I mean, you couldn't like... We always do a big tour of not only the convention center, but some of the other outlying setups in other convention areas. And like everywhere you turned, there was like a, hey, Google command. I'm trying not to say it to fire everything in my office up, but there was like the hey, you know, Google command. There was Google Assistant. I mean, it was blasted on everything. Like companies I never heard of were like, look, we put Google Assistant in our TVs or we put it in this or this. Like, we know that Amazon Alexa has this big head start on Google, and everyone really likes to talk about how Echo is like just taking over the world and Google has so much to catch up to. From what I saw at CES this week, I don't think it's going to be long before Google has essentially caught up to Amazon. Because while Amazon is starting to put Alexa in stuff, like Google's putting the assistant in everything. I mean, like everybody's TV is about to have it, whereas Amazon, I don't feel like has fully gone into TVs yet. We saw both of them go in a bunch of appliances, but we obviously saw a ton of Google Assistant headphones, obviously all these new smart speakers and displays and stuff. Whereas Amazon, like they mostly are the only ones making Alexa stuff with displays and things like that. Whereas Google's like, no, we want everyone to make this stuff. And I know Amazon's trying to open it up to more and more players, but it almost seems like maybe Google made it easier to get into because it was everywhere.
It's ridiculous at how fast the adoption for Assistant has been. It's really exciting times. I mean, I got an email the other day for a freaking Google Assistant powered sous vide cooker and a air fryer and like anything you can imagine now, or like a toaster, or, you know, coffee makers, blah, blah, blah. Like everything can have Google Assistant now. And
yeah,
it's penetrating every aspect of like the consumer electronics experience. And soon, one day, it'd be cool if we could see like a little, like I know, you know, Amazon and Google, you know, maybe they don't want to do stuff like that. But I would just love like the cross compatibility, like on certain certain products. So, you know, if my Xbox had that, or I would really like Assistant on my MacBook. But that'll never happen because it has Siri. But
do you think like Google has to build like an app for computers that lets you fire up the assistant that you can create like a command shortcut to or something?
Exactly. Like that.
They haven't actually, but
there was a third party developer who did have like some type of workaround so you could have Assistant for your MacBook. It just got kind of janky. And then I think High Sierra or something killed it. So I don't either way. Assistant, it's coming whether you want it or not. Yeah. At least it's not Bixby. So I'm fine with Assistant taking over.
Bixby was there. Bixby was announced for like fridges and something else.
It was announced for Samsung's ecosystem, you know, like Samsung sticking to Samsung. And apparently that's okay for them. Meanwhile, the rest of the world, we're going to use like the good options, or the maybe the better options at this time, being Alexa or Google Assistant.
They're going to lose this battle. I know Samsung doesn't lose too many battles. They're going to lose the assistant battle. Bixby is going to be, first of all, it's too complex. But it's so much easier to use Google or Amazon for this stuff than Samsung's own proprietary assistant that, I don't know. I mean, I could sit here and trash on Bixby for a while, but Bixby 2.0 is coming this year. It's going to be in fridges and cool. It's going to be in your $5,000 fridge next to your BFGD.
Yeah. Samsung Shields is in the chat. What's crazy is that you pay for a device that allows the government to listen to you. Yeah, I've got my tinfoil hat is still over here. Yeah. I'm totally fine. You know, if the government thinks I'm important enough to listen to, then I mean, that's a compliment to me, I guess. So that's fine. They're not hearing much very important. Like, I'm just saying, like, you know, hot word play metal music or whatever. I'm just nothing.
I have a box of tinfoil in my drawer right here just for when we do the show.
Exactly.
So that we can just, so we can get the rip and everything. I can just shape it live on air.
No offense, Samsung Shield. I, you know, I might be one of the people who believes that, yeah, the government is probably listening to you, but
I'm going to go to eBay and buy used tinfoil.
You, oh man.
In Samsung Shield.
We'll send it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. So assistant stuff is everywhere.
It is. It took over.
All right. So honorable mentions.
Okay. So let me go ahead and start this off with saying, I don't know if you guys follow me on Twitter at Tim Otato or whatever, but I did say, you know, I've been talking about Project Linda from Razer.
Trash.
No, yeah, no, not trash. Okay. Here we go. So I started off by saying Project Linda is awesome. Now, if you don't know what Project Linda is, Project Linda takes your $700 Razer phone, turns it into a trackpad or secondary display in what is essentially a lap dock. So it's a, what is that, a clamshell design or whatever. And you open it up, it has a quad A 13. It's basically a MacBook Pro 13-inch. It has a 13-inch quad HD touchscreen, Chroma-powered keyboard. It's got 200 gigs of storage, drive. But what does all the computing power is the Razer phone. So you've got your 8 gigs of RAM, Snapdragon 835, et cetera, et cetera. And the Project Linda will also act as a battery bank or power bank for the smartphone. So it's a sweet little accessory. And I said as much. Like, when I wrote it up, I was like, this is cool. Like, this is awesome. Like, Project Linda is probably the best laptop out there. But that's again,
not much.
But yeah, exactly. But then again, it's a laptop. So not only that, but you still need to buy the Razer phone to make this thing even function. If the Razer phone is not inside Project Linda, it is worthless. It does absolutely nothing. It looks cool. It's made out of aluminum. Very fancy stuff. But again, at this time, it's just a concept. Probably because Razer doesn't want to fund too much of these, considering how little I would think the Razer phone is actually selling. I mean, you have to know that the Razer phone can't be selling too well, because we've talked about this before. US is built on carrier plans and payment plans and equipment payment plans and whatnot. So with the Razer phone, there can't be millions of units out there. And you would need at least hundreds of thousands, I would think, to make Project Linda a viable thing to put money into. We don't even, I mean, again, it's a concept. We don't know price. Anyway, tons of people said best of CES was Project Linda. I am of the belief that Project Linda is cool, considering it's a, you know, it's basically like a Kickstarter thing, an Indiegogo. You know, right now it's just a concept. We don't know if Razer's even going to go through with it, because again, you've got to have the Razer phone, which is already a hefty investment. So right now I said it's cool. It's definitely not best of. However, it's cool enough for me to give it an honorable mention, which is by no means a best of or anything. It's just that, hey, this is cool. I will mention it honorably. And there it is.
This thing is such garbage.
What?
This thing is so terrible.
No, I don't think it's terrible.
People love it because people fall in love with a good concept.
Yeah.
This thing is terrible. Okay. Number one, it's only a concept. So it's never going to actually happen. But two, like you said, it costs $700 for the phone. But then you have to buy this thing. And this is like a specced out little empty laptop. Like outside of like the no processor, internal, that kind of stuff, because you know, it runs off your phone. Like you said, it's a quad HD display. It's got a backlit like Chroma keyboard or whatever. So it's going to cost like, should they make this, let's say, it's probably cost like $500. So you slap your phone in, it turns into a touchpad. It's like a neat trick, right? It's like Dex. It's like the Motorola laptop. It runs like this custom sort of Android looking skin. This thing is so worthless. I cannot believe how excited people are for this. I'm actually glad that you battled everyone who gave it like best of CES. This is just one of those things where it's like a really cool demo and everyone goes, oh, that's cool. Best of CES, because you made a cool demo. This thing will never sell. It'll be too expensive, and it runs like some janky custom garbage OS. I hate this thing so much.
I agree with you. However, if say Project Lind is the starting point for others to say, oh, you know what? That is really smart. We can make the phone the trackpad. Like say Apple came out with this and you take the iPhone 10, you throw it into where like your mouse pad would be. It is the trackpad. And you've got basically a MacBook Pro running, of course, it wouldn't be running Mac OS, it'd be running iOS. But still, I mean, you know, Apple's pretty good about that stuff. So that would sell. And
iOS is a better, bigger operating system, I think, right? Like on tablets and stuff, they've actually made it a decent. This, I don't believe that it'll ever be a great desktop experience. Like Apple's probably closer than anybody just because iOS does scale pretty well and they've really made the, like, was the last iPad Pro or whatever, like they and with iOS 11, I think they really put in like a bunch of like not enterprise, but you know what I mean, like business like class experiences in it to make it more powerful in that sense. I don't think Razer's ever going to get there. And who wants to play all their mobile games like in a laptop? I don't know. I think this thing is terrible.
Kellen thinks it's terrible. I don't think it's bad. I think it's a start. Samsung Shield says in the chat, it's a start. And it could lead to something better down the road. I think it's cool because we know, we've seen now over the years that the iPad did not kill the laptop. Like tablets did not kill the laptop as some analysts said that they would. So the fact that we could take a smartphone, and these smartphones are getting stupid powerful, we could just take the smartphone, have it power a laptop experience. I think that's pretty cool. It could lead to something better down the road. It's just not Project Linda at this time.
It's never going to be.
It would need to be a phone from Apple or Samsung, like someone who's got millions, a lot of volume out there to really, I think, even make a dent if you're even trying to like make a dent in the PC. Well, they're
apparently going to do something similar with their next Dex, right? Dex. Like turn the phone into a trackpad and do all that stuff. And that obviously that needs more peripherals like a monitor and things. But like, look, Samsung is poured tons of money into Dex and trying to make the operating system, their custom operating system, good. Dex is garbage. And that's Samsung. This is Razer.
Dex works for what it needs to.
I'm the ultimate Project Linda hater. I saw this thing, was like, okay, it's kind of cool that you dock it in there, fires it up, and it's a little trackpad, and it looks really slick. But come on, the software, the idea, the price going to be behind this thing. No way in hell would anyone buy this.
Well, there is no... I mean, we don't know price probably just because it will never launch. But right. And also one conversation I was having on Twitter yesterday is someone from another site who did give this like a best of CES award said, I wouldn't buy it. I don't know anyone that would buy it, but it's still cool. It's like, well, I mean, I just feel like if we're giving it like best of CES awards, like it needs to be something you'd want to buy, or it needs to be something, you know, that maybe 100,000 other people would want to buy. And this just didn't do it for me. That's why I gave it an honorable mention. This
before, like outside of the phone turning into a trackpad, which seems to be the only thing people actually think is cool. Yeah. Like we've seen laptops, we've seen decks, we've seen people do the like, well, your phone, you should just have one. Like, I don't know how many executives I've seen on stage go, see this phone? This should be the only computer you need. And then it turns into one. And then it never does anything and no one buys it. And the experience is garbage. I just don't know why people are still trying to do this. Android built for desktops. I'm sorry, it wasn't.
If you could somehow have Android like dual boot Chrome OS and plug this into a Pixelbook, and instead of it running Chrome on Leo,
that makes sense,
right?
This doesn't. if you could dual boot something, or if Google actually makes an operating system that does mixes sort of Chrome and Android, and they make something like this, that would totally make sense. This is running an operating system that's not made for desktops.
No, it's not.
People would stop trying to make it do that.
Yeah, and we know it's not made for it because it doesn't even work on tablets barely.
Right.
So right. I don't know how we think attaching a keyboard to a bigger display is going to make it anything better.
No
so.
Idea.
Honorable mention, though.
You could give it an honorable mention. I will give it honorable worst of CES, most overblown thing I've ever seen in 2018. I know we're only a few days, but I'm a hater of this stuff. I like concepts can be fun. I don't think turning your phone into a laptop is a fun concept in 2018 anymore.
Well, there you go.
Sorry. But we don't have to see eye to eye on everything.
No, we do not.
The Mate 10 Pro also was not announced at CES. It was announced like 4 months ago. Got plenty of love for best of CES.
It got though. Best of CES. Five-month-old phone. Yeah,
5-month-old phone. I don't know that you and I would give it a best of CES, but we will say that it's a cool phone and it's worth talking about. And again, like we mentioned earlier in the show, that it's too bad that it didn't get that carrier partner it deserved. Because it probably is a phone that, like, even as a few months old, could have been a cool early purchase if you needed a smartphone through AT&T, and it would have given just people choice in general. But it is coming to the U.S. now, which is kind of the news that came out of CES. But it's going to be expensive. And when's it coming? You can pre-order like in a couple of weeks or something, right?
I think pre-order goes up February 4th and then purchase February 18th.
Okay, and it's like $800 like that. $700
It was like, yeah, like $799 or something.
Expensive. And it, yeah. Is it only T-Mobile, AT&T, or is it like fully unlocked? You know,
should just be like unlocked GSM.
Okay, yeah. So that's unfortunate. Yeah, pre-orders February 4th, arrives February 18th, $799.
All right, I was right on there.
We played with it though. The blue version is so good looking. That like deep blue. Kind of matches the Droid Life blue a little bit, maybe a little lighter, but it's really sexy. I played with it for a while. The cameras are super fast. I mean, the UI is what it is, right? It's their EMUI, but
could too bad. Be worse.
Too bad.
Could be LG's. Sorry, LG. It's getting like the V30 was fine. All right? I'll stop trashing on LG skin, but I guess just over the years they've, yeah.
We just want LG to start over.
Yeah.
All right. In non-CES news that came out this week, Google's quietly bought a company named Redux. And Redux has essentially like shut their website down now and tried to disappear and not really tell anyone that they were bought by Google. What Redux does, a couple of cool things. They try to turn displays into speakers. And then the other thing they do is they allow displays to have crazy haptic feedback like at multiple touch points throughout a display. We don't know why it was such a secretive acquisition, but they were kind of a startup, had taken some funding in, and Google must have been like, look, this is cool, let's buy it now before it gets too big and before somebody else tries to. The panel audio stuff, like, there's not a lot of explanation about how it works, but they said they can deliver naturalistic wide frequency range audio from a panel, providing a versatile, robust overall solution. Which, so that means like you could take the speakers out of a phone, allow for more components to be put in there, a bigger battery or something, and let your display create sound. So what are they're doing? Where did I explain this? They're using special actuators that must do some sort of vibration, right, to create sound. But I have no idea how that works, but it's kind of cool. It must work somehow, right? The other thing with the tactile feedback, which is where you can have haptic effects throughout. I don't know. That could be fun for gaming or something like that. You just get a different effect depending on where you touch. But it seems like some future-y tech that could be fun built into like a Pixel phone or something like that. So anyway, that happened. Essential also announced that they're in their store, they're selling a bunch of accessories now. And while they still don't have that wireless charger dock that they were supposed to have, or that little home unit they were supposed to do, they're now selling a couple pairs of earbuds that are USB type C at $49 and $99. Those are two of the cheaper USB C buds you can find like anywhere. Like if you need, like if you have a Pixel and you need somewhat could be decent USB, we don't know if they're any good. We haven't tried them, but $49 is not a terrible price. I mean, if you go look up USB C earbuds on Amazon, it's like no brand garbage that I don't know that you should trust. or if you go to like the Google store, that stuff costs like $130. So what else did they announce? A charger. You can buy replacement fast chargers for like way too much money. $40 for an essential fast charger. Their charger is really fast though, don't get me wrong, but that's a lot. So anyway, essential. Oh, and they're going to start selling a case for the 360 camera. And I think they said it's going to cost, I thought I saw in like a tweet or something, they said how much it was going to cost, and it was like way too expensive for a case.
For a case.
Making that up, yeah.
And it's sold separately. Like, you don't even get the case if you buy the 360. I mean, what? Right.
Yeah, you don't even get it with, like, yeah, if you buy the camera, they're not selling it with a, it's silly. And then in final news, Verizon on Saturday of all days announced that Total Mobile Protection, their biggest insurance program for your phones you can sign up for, it's jumping from $11 a month to $13 per month. On January 25th, that'll happen if you're a new customer and sign up for it. If you're already enrolled in it, your price will also go up, but not until March 6th. So if you're part of Total Mobile Protection, just know that your price is going up no matter what.
Sweet.
What are the changes there? Well, Verizon initially only said that about 150 devices can now be replaced if broken for as little as $89. We said that's cool, but which phones are those? And we couldn't find them anywhere. So Verizon then reached out and said that there are phones that have dropped down to $89, but it clearly isn't like the newer top tier phones, because the newer top tier phones used to cost $200 for a deductible. Those have only dropped to $149, but they still did drop by $50. Other phones down to $89. And they also said it, when traveling internationally, there are now ways, if you're in Total Mobile Protection, that you can get screen replacements done and phones swapped out, things like that. Anyways,
well, that happened Verizon.
While you guys weren't paying attention on a Saturday.
On a Saturday, sort of somewhat after New Year's.
Yeah, just not good timing, Verizon. Come on now. Interesting. All right, I think that's it. Long show. We had a lot to talk about. Oh, Tim and I, we always talk about our CES dinner. We went to Old Homestead Steakhouse at Caesars. So for those who don't know, every year at CES, like the night before we leave, we try to just like pick like a really nice restaurant out and just kind of go wild and celebrate the fact that we're leaving Vegas. We picked Old Homestead Steakhouse. It was okay.
Well, the steak itself was not, I mean, it just wasn't up to snuff compared to like other steaks we've had. I know you and me are like sort of steak snobs. Like, I cook steak at home, and we both know good steak, and these steaks weren't all that great. They were just standard, like, kind of, you know, ribeyes. Like, they were okay. Like, the flavor was okay. I think we both added a truffle butter to them, which really sort of upped the experience a little bit. But
it might have been rough.
Yeah, without that, it might have been rough, but it was fine. I mean, we had...
The tower was pretty solid.
The which?
The seafood tower that we had there was pretty solid.
Yeah, of course. Shrimp. Oysters.
The steak just, you know, they even had some really great Oregon wine that I like, which is surprising. Most people don't. But the steak, yeah. So Old Homestead Steakhouse, I don't, if you want to go for best steak in Las Vegas and treat yourself, I don't think I'm going to recommend it, unfortunately.
I mean, there are so many awesome places to get steaks in Vegas that recommending Old Homestead probably wouldn't be my first choice by any means.
No, go to Gordon Ramsay Steak, go to Strip House, go to Mastro's. I mean, there's a bunch we could probably list off over Old Homestead.
Yeah, Swande in the chat says Gordon Ramsay's Pub. Period. Went there a couple of times. I got a coffee mug because we were staying in Caesars. So, like, when we were doing lunch, we would just go there, pick up some wedge salads and stuff and some sliders. Fantastic little place. The wait staff was super friendly. I really liked Gordon's Pub. It had been my first time going there. It was delicious. Yep. Again, I got a mug. They got that new Hell's Kitchen opened up out front of Caesars. They weren't taking reservations, and they were probably just all booked up. I don't know if anyone here watches Hell's Kitchen, but that's like one of my favorite shows. Chef Christina was in the house. I got a shirt, and I also got a fridge magnet that said it's effing raw because, you know, it's like it's raw, and I love it. So maybe next year we can go to Hell's Kitchen. That'd be fun.
Tim's a big Gordon fan.
Huge Ramsay fan. I love it when he belittles people and tells them that their food is crap. It's awesome.
We one of the nights, there's just some other random stories since we're sitting here, but one of the nights we were at like a big press event at night. Then when it was the night of the national championship football game, and we finished that at one of our favorite restaurant, Heritage Steak and Mirage, also really great, by the way. They make their own in-house jerky that is off menu typically, and it is awesome. Anyway, just a little tip there. Anyway, we finished that and came back to our to Caesars, and we weren't really considering it, but we had been invited to a party. Oh, wait, no, it was the party. Like, no, this was a different night. Sorry. Anyway, different night. We were at a couple of different events, and we were on our way back to our hotel, and there was a monster party at the Omnia Club in Caesars. And we had been invited to it, but we got back late enough. We didn't really care. Anyway, there was a line of like, what do you think? Like 5,000 people out the door. I don't know why. And so we have to understand at CES, these big companies throw big parties in the clubs. They bring in artists. Like I think Iggy Azalea was at this one or something. And we think maybe Steve Aoki was after her. And so it's like the one time like a whole bunch of nerds can like not have to get dressed up and wear fleece and hats and like just go to a club and no one cares what they look like. And they just get to go drink and hang out. Right. So, yeah, the line was like, I don't know if any of these people actually ever got into the thing, but just one of the wild things that happens at CES.
So much wildness.
Iggy Azalea and some free drinks. Thousands of people.
And that'll do it. Free booze really is what does it, I think. Yeah.
It really is what does it.
I don't think they care who's playing.
I probably don't know.
Little Uzi Vert. They're packing in there.
I'd go to that over Iggy Azalea. Maybe. Maybe. All right. Anything else? This wasn't like a wild CES. And Tim and I are old now. Like, we don't get as crazy as we once did.
That's true. Getting old, guys. Yeah. We started this. I was just a young pup. I was going there and getting blacked out. Losing hundreds of dollars on the blackjack tables now. I mean, our nights are early and we're very mature about how we, you know, gamble and all that stuff. We set a limit.
A little gambling got crushed everywhere.
So. Kellen was getting dominated, folks. It was bad times. We play this game called Let It Ride, and he won one hand out of two nights that we played for a little bit. And like he kept, hey man, let me borrow five. I was winning pretty good. He kept taking my chips.
Keep playing. It was brutal. It was brutal gambling week for me. And like Tim said, we don't do too much, but I got destroyed everywhere. Not good.
Yeah. Good times though.
Good times. All right. I don't think we got anything else for Droid Life the rest of the year. Obviously back on that normal grind on Monday, leading up to MWC end of February. So much Galaxy S9 hype probably coming.
Oh, God.
Looking forward to, though. Apparently, we got new smart home coverage coming. I think I committed to that today. So, should be a good 2018, that's for sure.
I'm stoked. I hope you all are ready for it. And you'll be here for the ride.
All right, guys. Enjoy your weekend. We're Droid Life.
Peace.